Show, Sports at 5905. Leafs game day. All the pressure on Tampa. Didn't think we'd be here. Didn't think we'd be in a position right out of the gate where all the questions were about Tampa Bay. Is Tampa fast enough? How's their rush defense? How healthy are their stars? Blah, 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 blah. Go on down the line. Saw my buddy Luke Fox. He's reporting on this series. You know, he's doing his intrepid reporting. He's out there. He's going, hey, the view from the Tampa dressing room, right? Their view is that was about them more than it was about the Leafs. I think it was a little bit of both. What kind of punchback are we going to get tonight? And who's going to be the lineup? Luke Fox, NHL editor here at Sportsnet. Good morning, pal.
Good morning. How are you? Excited for game two? Nervous? How are you feeling, JD?
Right now, this is the calm before the storm. This is where I feel great, and I go, man, Tampa sucks. Tampa might not even be that good. That team's supposed to be amazing. They look pretty slow and old, and Kucherov's a front runner, and maybe Vasilevsky's human, and blah, blah, blah. A point is hurt. Who cares? And then the game will start, and I'll be a bag of ropes, you know? It's just this is the way that it goes. So let me just start with the Tampa side of things, because the three of us, when we were discussing the series to start today, we went, what's the most interesting thing tonight? The answer was pretty much unanimously about Tampa Bay. We had Jeff Merrick come on, and we said, what are you most interested in tonight? And he said, it's about how Tampa Bay responds. They have sort of put themselves in a spot where, again, you reported this, that they're very much, hey, we didn't make it hard on them. John Cooper had that messaging right after the game where he said that the Leafs didn't have to play particularly hard to beat them, and now the messaging from their group has been that it's about them. Tonight, this has to be Tampa's best punch because this is the way that they've rolled it out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's all about how Tampa responds. And I thought should have been a little bit about how Tampa responded in game one. Like the Leafs, you know, kill that massive 5-minute penalty and take the lead and they're piling in goals. And there was no pushback. Like the only pushback was Pat Maroon trying to muck it up and when the game was already over. You know, that I was really surprised that there was no pushback in terms of play on the ice from the Tampa Bay Lightning in game one. So they're striking a very calm composure, like when we talked to them yesterday, because they practiced in the same facility as the Leafs. And their message was kind of like, we've been through this before. We've lost game ones before and come back and won the series. It's no big deal. It's only one game. You know, that was us playing poorly. That wasn't the Leafs playing good. That was us playing poorly. And I was kind of like, is Cooper sending that message because he wants to instill confidence in his guys and deep down he's a little bit worried by what he saw from Toronto? Or is he maybe trying to get in Toronto's heads a little bit, you know, if that gets out in the media that, oh, Toronto's not that good. So, you know, he's been through so many of these series, right? And he's won 8 in a row. He loves the mind games. He's great in front of the camera. So, but let's see what they have on the ice because they didn't have much in game one. That wasn't really Tampa Bay's identity, and I would be shocked if they don't come back strong. I mean, either they win or it's a really close game. I cannot see another blowout like that.
I mean, I have trouble seeing it as well, Luke, but I would like to see it. I'd be okay with that. So the Leafs might... The Leafs could conceivably come out stronger as well. They obviously played something close to their best game, but the power play wasn't entirely clicking, and it sounds like they could get Michael Bunting back. How close is Bunting to being able to play tonight? And if not tonight, how do they work him back later in the series?
Yeah, I'd bet on him playing tonight. You know, they said they wanted to see how his injury, and he's keeping that to himself. He wouldn't get into what that injury is, understandably, but he wanted to see how it felt this morning. Did it flare up after a good, hard practice with Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews yesterday? But he hasn't spoken since he got hurt to us. And the trend is they don't make players available to us until they're ready to come back and play. And he spoke yesterday. And he was in good spirits. He said he felt good. So I think it's just a formality of check in with the trainers, make sure you're good to go. I'd be a little bit surprised if he doesn't play tonight. If not tonight, game three for sure. He's very close. He looks good. And the timing really couldn't be more perfect with Kyle Clifford coming out of the lineup. It's a pretty seamless transition. He'll take his usual spot with Marner and Matthews. Kerfoot looks like he's bumping down with Tavares and Kasha all the way down to the fourth line. And he should improve that fourth line, in my mind, hockey-wise, with Clifford being suspended. So I think it makes Toronto instantly a deeper team. And hopefully they can carry some of that momentum game one tonight, because that building was rocking. It was an awesome scene last night, game one.
Yeah, honestly, it came through the broadcast just as well. So exciting atmosphere. But do you agree that he should be put back on that top line? You know, we debated that maybe Kerfoot stays there. He had a great game. He was clicking as well. Do you maybe give Bunting a little bit of time to get back into it, a little bit of a lower role? Or do you think putting him right back where he's been is the right decision?
I think it's the right decision. And I think Matthews and Marner like having him there too. And they have a say. Like, let's be honest. You know, I'm sure you want to keep your stars happy. They love playing with them. And that's where he's been most comfortable. That's where he's been playing. So if he's going to come back, why not play with the guys he has built some really fantastic chemistry with? And Kerfoot is, you know, a coach's dream, because really Keith can put him anywhere. And he's able to fit in and mold his game and thrives. And honestly, you know, it wasn't like he was all over the score sheet in game one, but I thought he was flying. I thought he was skating hard. I thought he was making an impact. And I have no doubt that, you know, he's going to help John Tavares' game if he's on the second line.
So with Clifford being out, what do you do with that fourth line? Is Spezza going to make an appearance? You know, it seems like there's one person kind of floating around in that bottom four that might not get in. Is Spezza earned his role here in the second playoff game, or do you think he sits again?
He sits again. As long as Bunting's back, I think he sits again. He stayed on the ice yesterday for some extra work, and it was Kasha taking the Clifford spot on the fourth line. So, it's unfortunate, you know, and Sheldon Keefe had to have, like, a talk with him, and those are not fun talks. Like, Jason Spezza has worn his heart on his sleeve, and it's spoken openly about, hey, father time is knocking. This might be my last chance. I want to be in there. You know, he probably wants it more than some of the guys that are in. But just because he's wasn't in game one, just because he's probably not in game two, doesn't mean he's not going to appear in the series. Doesn't mean that when he does get in, he's not going to be, you know, busting his butt and making an impact. I think he's going to lay it all out there. I mean, we saw it. He thought the Columbus series might have been his last series. He's fighting. Like, he's just going to do anything he can to hold on to this dream and chase it.
I feel for the guy. I really, really do. Because who in this market doesn't like Spezza? I'm talking about media. It's wild still to me that the Senator killer that killed this franchise for so long has become so beloved in this city. But yes, fans, media, coaches, people around the game, whatever, they all respect Jason Spezza. They all like Jason Spezza. But every time you look at the lineup, now that Bunting is back, it's just impossible to find the spot where he should be. In a physical series like this, it has to be Wayne Simmonds. Like, he fit. I know he played 5 minutes or 6 minutes even in a blowout, but you got to remember that he was important. Like, he really was important to them. If we're going to say that the Leafs matching the physical identity and being able to throw in a scrum and having someone out there that feels like they can match that intensity, Simmonds is more of the guy than Simmonds is. Or, sorry, than Spezza is. I don't think you're taking Blackwell out after that first game. And now Kasha came back healthy, and he was quality, and Keefe was raving about where he was at with his game. He's probably going to be the guy that bumps down the lineup, right? But I can't get there right now where Spezza makes more sense than the other guys. I thought he made more sense than Clifford. I think I was proven to be correct on that, even though Clifford, arguably, you can't change the space-time continuum. But yeah, it's a tough one for Jason Spezza, and I don't see him getting in this series unless there's an injury. The question is, does Kyle Clifford ever play again for this team in the playoffs? What's your impression there of how the team feels about it?
Well, Sheldon's, like, pumped his tires and kind of dismissed it as one mistake, but that was a brutal decision, right? Like, it was so clear that you got to let up on that. The puck was long gone. Does he get back in? As long as everyone's healthy, I doubt it. But, you know, he could swap Simmonds for Clifford. You know, I think you want one of those guys in the lineup. So, and also, you got to realize these guys are veterans. Like, there's some wear and tear. If he feels like one of those guys is losing some speed, they're playing every other night. and we could get into like some double overtime. Like, I don't know if you stayed up and watched any of that Rangers Penguins, but we could get into some multiple overtimes with these teams. So if Wayne Simmons is playing two overtimes, maybe Spezza does come in the next game. Maybe Clifford does come in the next game. So I wouldn't write anyone off right now, because this is a bit of a grind, and fresh legs, you know, a guy that's been sitting in the press box hungry. Sometimes you pop one of those guys in the middle of a series and it provides a jolt.
I'd imagine the wear and tear concern is even larger on the Tampa Bay side. Toronto obviously playing the same schedule, but Tampa Bay's coming off of two cup runs in a 12-month span. Would you expect that to have a bigger impact on Tampa as the series goes along? We're already starting to hear rumors of Point dealing with a shoulder issue. Guys not looking, you know, Kucherov doesn't look like he's in a playoff game the other night. Does that tilt things in Toronto's favor as you think of the Tampa kind of cumulative wear and tear here?
I don't think it should. Not in game one. I mean, I think if Point is dealing with a shoulder injury and he doesn't look like himself, that could tilt things in Toronto's favor. But the wear and tear of the last two playoff runs, I think there's enough adrenaline and juice going into series one that shouldn't be an issue. It could be an issue if, you know, Tampa beats Toronto and they go into like deep into round three and four, maybe that piles up. But I think there's enough energy and desire to do something that no team has done since the 80s Islanders and win three in a row. Like, there's enough there that should not be an issue. What might be an issue is Toronto's a good team and Toronto's fast and Toronto is hungry and finally has the scar tissue built up from all the losses, and they took that Montreal one really hard and want to prove all the doubters wrong and prove something to themselves as well. I mean, I think that they're dealing with the team on the rise. They're dealing with the best version, in my mind, of the Leafs lineup. The defense has never been this good. You know, Mark Giordano, Ilya Lyubushkin, these are great ads. Like, that's what could give Tampa trouble. I don't think they can just write it off as, oh, we're tired from all those boat parades and, you know, winning all those rounds.
You ever done a parade like that? It's exhausting. I remember the Raptors, the Raptors championship parade. I was tired for a couple of days after that one, and I wasn't even
out there in the sun for 12 hours waiting for the float to get there.
The water.
Just asking for one Marcus Gasol beer thrown my way.
Yeah, I did the Raptors parade. That's my only championship parade I did. Yeah.
There you go. It's exhausting. Okay, so if it's not the, you know, if they can't hang it on the cumulative wear and tear, and it's not anything other than, hey, the Leafs are a really good team and Tampa played a really poor game, what do you think is at the root then of a couple of their top guys having pretty weak performances? And I don't want to pin it just on Kucherov. I thought Sergachev had a bad game as well. Obviously, that's
stunk.
About
they had no good players.
It's about the worst you're going to see Vasilevsky too. Is, I guess what I'm having trouble with here, Luke, is were it any other team, I would be like, well, yeah, you're going to have a stinker sometimes. But Tampa has shown over the last 2 years they don't in the playoffs. And I guess that's what I'm having trouble marrying right now between game one and expecting them to flip the switch one game late tonight.
Oh, so you're going to be surprised if they flip the switch?
No. I'm not going to be surprised at all because it's the Tampa Bay Lightning and it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't know. It seems so uncharacteristic for them. And I mean, look, we've never seen them behind two games in a playoff series the last 2 years. So that should probably tell me enough. So if you're Sheldon Keefe, then let's talk more tactically than just, hey, you got to play with more force and you got to come out with better energy. What is the thing that you're looking for Tampa to change, and how are you kind of preemptively adjusting to that? Like, is there something fundamentally different Tampa Bay could do other than play better?
Well, one of their strengths is their power play, and they went 0-for-5 on the power play. So yesterday, the Lightning were working on their zone entries. Like, they couldn't even get set up. And part of that is them being sloppy and not being dialed in, or maybe not, you know, doing enough research on how good Toronto's penalty kill is and how they swarm you and how they love to jump on the counterattack, even when they're shorthanded. And you know, some of that's execution. Now, I think you need to give some credit to the Leafs, who brought in Dean Chanuth, who's a bit of a PK wizard. He was, like, killing it with the Carolina Hurricanes. and Rod Brind'Amour. I've talked to him this season, and he's a little bit sour that they lost that assistant coach to the Leafs because he's so good. But he really remodeled the PK. It was a sore point for the Leafs. They've been bottom third in the penalty kill for probably a handful of years. And then Dean comes in, and all of a sudden, I think they finished 7th or 8th or something like that, top 10 for sure. And they led the league in shorthanded goals, and David Kampf gets another one in game one. So I think tactically, I think Tampa needs to pay attention to the special teams. And that was a wonky game in game one because basically half the game was played on special teams, and the Leafs dominated on special teams. So if you dominate on special teams and there's hardly any 5-on-5 play, guess what happens? And I think both coaches would rather there be a bit more 5-on-5 play. Like, we didn't really get to dive too deep into the matchup game. And then, you know, Clifford's out and the lines get a bit scrambly too. So I think both coaches would want that and probably expect there to be fewer whistles called tonight. But let's see. But, if we're talking tactically, Tampa needs to sharpen up its power play. I mean, that helped them win cups. Just buzzing the puck around. And, you know, to do that, you got to get set up in the zone. And they were working on that yesterday.
The matchup thing is a good point. You know, you're so curious about what Sheldon Keefe's going to do with certain lines and certain deployments. And then, hey, half the game's on special teams, and that makes a decision for you. Luke Fox, NHL writer at Sportsnet, great piece up on Michael Bunting idolizing Darcy Tucker. A great piece earlier in the season that you can go back to on Mitch Marner's mental approach that seems pretty relevant now. Luke, thanks for taking the time this morning, man, and enjoy tonight.
Yeah, it should be a fun one. Can't wait. Have a good one, guys.
Luke Fox, NHL writer at Sportsnet, thinks Michael Bunting could be back tonight. Thinks the Tampa Bay Lightning need to be a little better on that power play against the league's most dangerous penalty kill.
It's okay if they're not.
It's going to be interesting to see how many minutes Michael Bunting plays tonight and whether he does get the full back to the first line treatment and how the trickle-down effect ends up working out there. But to marry all of our things together, it's, hey, how does Tampa Bay respond? Seems like for them, I would guess, even for a Stanley Cup champion like Tampa Bay, psychologically, they have to have a better power play than the one that they did in game one. Blake, you brought up Toronto's power play and how that's an area where they can improve because it can look a little bit better. Maybe it's not a 5-on-3 and they don't get one because they end up getting the Matthews bomb where he walks down where they're way ahead in the game and Belmar makes a horrible mistake and just lets him walk into it from the blue line, essentially. But no, Tampa Bay is the team that's probably going to be overthinking it. If they get out to their first two power plays in this game or they get a couple of those opportunities, it's not about just not scoring. It's the momentum that it brings, right? We all saw that it wasn't that the Leafs killed the five-minute penalty. It was that they got more chances than Tampa Bay got. It's that they looked completely discombobulated. It's that Kucherov gets down near the hash marks, and he's trying to float weird passes through four different players to get it to the other side of the ice. Like, they need to look competent. They need to look threatening. They need to look dangerous because I really do feel as though if they don't, that's going to have a real resonance on the rest of the game and the way that it's played. And that Toronto's going to have an incredible amount of confidence off of that. And it might demoralize Tampa, even though, again, they do have championship pedigree and Toronto does not.
Yeah, they do have championship pedigree. And they also know from what they did on their way up that it's really, really hard to win, and you can't afford too many games like game one. The penalty kill thing is so fascinating to me, too, because I can't – obviously, you don't want Kyle Clifford – I don't want Kyle Clifford out there at all, but you don't want him out there and getting kicked out of the game after 40 seconds of play. However, I can't imagine anything more psychologically demoralizing than a five-minute power play where you're constantly skating back into your own end to set it back up, mm-hmm. and all your juice, like, hey, you want your PP1 out there for probably – a minute and a half to a minute 40, get a quick breather, come back out for another minute and a half, minute 40, and instead they spend their whole time skating up and down the ice. That's a tough one to bounce back from.
I will say, there's honestly, as a player, nothing more demoralizing and frustrating than a team owning you when you have the advantage. It is such a mental thing that happens to you where you start to get, okay, what's going on here? They're controlling the play. The other team has completely a different type of energy afterwards. Like, I was a PKer because I didn't get much other ice time. And it is such a it's such a game shift to get out there and to own a PK, and you come back on the bench and everyone's, you know, patting you on the back. And there's just so much good energy that comes from a penalty kill. And we saw that with the Leafs. Like, their power kill is truly a weapon against any team moving forward. And for Tampa to have so many opportunities and to squander them, like, it is, it's definitely something that continues on. When you get in the dressing room, you're frustrated. Come on, guys. Like, we had a power play. We really need to capitalize. We really needed that opportunity. And if you feel it slipping away, and it is just, like, I think one of the best opposites of energy. It's a negative energy that they have when they can't score one goal on a power play. So that's the huge advantage, like a back pocket thing that the Leafs will have, if they, even if they continue on past the season, like, their power kill is dynamite.
Yeah, it really is. And how many times you can just simplify this. How many times are you watching a hockey game and your team gets a power play and you go, they need to have one here? Because, you know,
there's like a sense of urgency, like, you need to. And if you don't, what are you doing out there?
Exactly. And we've also seen this team grip the sticks too tight on a power play. Mm-hmm. This team is at a, even going into the playoffs, it was one of the things that everyone sort of kept quiet about, was power play wasn't clicking on the same wavelength as it was earlier in the season down the stretch. Mm-hmm. These things, just because you're Tampa Bay and you've won, doesn't mean that they can't be fragile at times. So that pressure of, we need one here, is sort of on Tampa Bay right away. And it is going to be interesting that one of the first things that happens in the series is, how does the team that has won respond to pressure? Because the team that hasn't responded to it extremely well in game one. And Toronto will have to answer those questions if Tampa Bay is about to punch, but this is the way that this works. So for the Leafs, to me, it's more about, how are you managing what is happening in the room right now? And mm-hmm. Keefe has been a pretty good barometer of this, and I've watched all the media availabilities of everybody so far. I don't think the Leafs are getting too high on themselves here. I don't think they're getting high on their own supply. I don't get the sense that these guys are thrilled with the way that they played, right? There's a measure of, obviously, satisfaction you get from a win like that. But I'm not – this isn't front-runner Leafs situation. I think that they understand the opportunity that's in front of them, and that this is a desperate game for them too.
Yeah, I was proud or very pleased with the way that they spoke about the game afterwards. Obviously, it's an exciting thing. You get a huge win on home ice. Mm-hmm. You get some of those playoff demons off your back if you're a Marner, you're a Matthews. But you have to have a little bit of a stoic outward look when you're talking about it, because it's really something that, and I think Chris Versteeg said it yesterday when we had him on, where the momentum doesn't carry, even though you feel like it does as a player. He said it doesn't. You know, you go to bed, you wake up in the morning, and it's another day at work. And whether we feel like, hey, they're riding this wave of momentum, it's a completely different game. You got to win every single game the way it is. And Keefe did a really good job at not over praising and giving so much extra confidence to his players, because you got to win four games. You know, that's just one. And I think that everybody had that mentality, at least outwardly. You can celebrate your successes in game one, but when it comes to tonight, it's a completely different game with higher stakes if you can get up 2-0.
The Toronto Maple Leafs having momentum is something that I would like to believe in. However, when it comes to the Wake and Rake, I would love to believe that momentum doesn't exist, because if it does, we're in trouble. Two bad nights in a row. Let's take a break. Let's tee up Jays-Yankees game three.
It
Leafs
can't
Lightning
get worse.
Game two. Let's get some W's. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590, The Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What you would have lost had you played the best bets from the last two shows.
Not the best.
Wake and Rake is down bad, missed six picks in a row. Oh my God. Okay, that's the end of that. Six misses in a row for the Wake and Rake. A truly horrible piece of business. We prided ourselves upon the fact that we went months, I believe 6 months without having that occurrence happen when it wasn't an 0-2 or some weird aberration, but where all three of us got all the picks wrong. I'm especially frustrated yesterday because I gave out three bonus picks that all hit, and I had a great day gambling. And yet the one pick that I gave as the official Wake and Rake pick ends up missing. All-time frustration. It ends up sitting on six in the Capitals-Panthers game. Thanks a lot. We couldn't get one other empty net goal. Hey, Florida, you're supposed to be an offensive team. You got two goals against Washington. Losers. Frauds. Knew it all along. But gave Blue Jays score first. It was the only bet you could have won on the Blue Jays yesterday. Gave the Milwaukee Bucks under. That was a walk away. That was a sleep through it. You could have had a little naparoo. No problem. No problem. And yet, here we are with the official pick. So anyways, let's get back. Let's get right. But first, let's talk about this Leafs game tonight. Let's do the lines. So the Toronto Maple Leafs back in action tonight against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Favorites.
Yep, -127. Tampa Bay +108. The total's at 6.5. It's a little bit of juice on the under. Ailish, how do you feel about the Leafs being favorites tonight, given that everything is about the Tampa pushback?
Yeah, I don't have any... I think it should still be a coin toss, is what I'm saying. I don't think that they're the heavy favorites. It shows that, like, the -127 isn't that heavy, but we are putting a lot of stake into Tampa having, or I am at least, having a bounce back game. I think it'll be tight. I don't expect it to be a 5-0 runaway. I mean, that'd be fun if it was another one of those, but I do expect it to be a pretty intense, tight game. I mean, the fact the Leafs won definitely gives them the edge in terms of the betting, but they were they not favorites? They were the, for game one, Tampa
yeah,
was
Leafs
favorite,
were favorites.
Right?
No, Leafs were favored.
Oh, Leafs were. Okay. So similar, I guess, today. But yeah, I don't expect it to be as much of a blowout. So -127, it's pretty decent, I guess. But I really expected Tampa to come tonight with something to prove. So it's hard to bet this one in terms of the money line, I think.
Well, it doesn't sound like you're having trouble betting. It sounds like you're having trouble placing the bet that you think is the right bet.
Like, do I think that Tampa can tie the series up? Certainly. Do I want to put that in the universe? Not really. I won't be betting the winner of this game. How about that? I don't want to bet the outcome of who will win.
My biggest thing from the first game that I think is a good indicator in terms of betting, if you are going to play something, is still, again, the under. I know that everything is going to be the emphasis on Tampa positive regression, Tampa positive regression, blah, 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 blah. The game really felt low scoring and non-threatening for large chunks of it. Mm-hmm. You saw that Toronto's blue line looks good. Their team defense looks good. Their kill looks good. And I'm, as far as positive regression, I think I view that more as Tampa's not going to lay as big of an egg as they laid. And so that's where I'm going with tonight is I think the under is a play.
I like the under as well, and we could throw some stats at that. Obviously, I've mentioned throughout the show today that the Leafs' power play, even though they got one, was a little underwhelming in terms of volume of opportunities relative to what they normally are, and that's something that Tampa Bay does a pretty good job with, and we know that the Leafs' penalty kill does a great job of that as well. We had Dave Randorf on earlier in the week, and we went into some of the Vasilevsky stats of, hey, he's 15-0 after a loss. Hey, only twice has he had a sub-900 save percentage in back-to-back playoff games these last couple of years. So a lot of indicate. And, hey, let's be honest, I don't think we're spending as much time on special teams this game, which generally that's a good indicator in favor of the under if you expect a few fewer penalties to be called.
Yeah, when I mentioned not wanting to bet the money line, the thing that I definitely would bet is the under. And I think you guys laid it out perfectly. But also, Jack and Vasilevsky are battling it out. I know that they're not the same tier of goaltender sometimes, but you rise to the occasion or to the opponent across the ice that you're facing. And Jack did that. He didn't have to stop too many shots, but he still held zero goals. And Vasilevsky, I think that's a blip. I really don't expect that to be the way that he plays tonight. I think that the under is certainly a good play, especially if it's at 6.5. So, do you think they're going to score 7 goals tonight?
No, the fear is always 3-3, which I think is realistic in this game very much, and the old 3-3. But no, I like the under. I thought that both teams looked good defensively, and before that Clifford hit, it looked like a lock of an under game. Mm-hmm. Toronto scores late in the first period. That's a huge momentum tilter. And then their offense kind of takes off. Marner looks spectacular for the entire game. Toronto gets a 5-on-3 power play in the last game. There were just a few things that really did go their way. Again, positive regression for Tampa. Don't expect them to get shut out throughout the series. But I didn't look at Tampa Bay and go, oh, that's a team that's about to score 4 goals. That's a team that's about to score 5 goals. Tonight is going to be a very tightly checked hockey game. Both teams know the weight of this game, and usually when it's one of these, I tend to lean towards, well, they're not going to open things up, Tampa Bay. That's not going to be what they do. They're going to try to play a low-event hockey game, and they're going to try to win by getting to the dirty areas and out-physicaling Toronto to those spots and scoring in them. Power play is going to be huge, but I think the Leafs' penalty kill is legit, legit, legit. We've seen an entire year of this where the penalty kill has been one of their strongest things on the planet. It's one of the things I have the highest confidence in is Toronto's ability in that area. So let's see it, and I think we're going to continue to see it. Okay, on to the Toronto Blue Jays, because we don't have any goal-scoring props up yet, or at least I don't, unless you guys do. But yeah, there's nothing else in this game that is up yet today at 8:37 in terms of points, goal-scoring props, anything along those lines. So yeah, I'm going to avoid it, but I'll probably be looking again for Mitch Marner, considering the way that he looked in that first game. I already have the
series total. I do have some of those
total,
if you'd like to hear.
You do? What do you have? Yeah. Do you have any that you actually like?
Well, I have Marner plus 220 for any time goal scorer. I have Marner over in points, which is plus money. If he's over 1.5 points, it's plus 165. The way that those two played on Monday is a good indicator that maybe there's that monkey off the back. I'm going to keep rolling. Over 1.5 points is a lot. You hit that,
plus
though.
Plus 165?
Yes.
But I actually think that's a pretty decent price if you consider the way that he looked in game one, the fact that the Leafs still have home ice advantage, which means that they have control of the matchups, where one of the points that they ended up getting in that game, right, one of Marner's 3 points was against the fourth line of Tampa, where they ripped down in transition and really showed that rush defense that we talked about, right? Hey, their transition defense was one of the worst in the NHL, Tampa Bay, after the All-Star break. Toronto's was the best. And part of that is Mitch Marner. And so when he's on the ice against a bad matchup, those guys can get up and down and they can score on you in a hot minute. So Mitch Marner actually over 1.5 points at plus 165 is something that I actually sneakily love. I'm not fully in on Marner having no ghosts once he gets punched or if the team gets punched, but right now they're riding high, they're front runners. I like the way that he's looked all year. He's been one of the best forwards in the NHL. That's not outrageous to me. So yeah, I actually kind of like Marner over 1.5. The goal scoring thing, I don't know. He went 18 games without a playoff goal. I'll probably not be putting my hard-earned money down on that one just quite yet, but the 1.5 points doesn't feel too far-fetched to me, especially at that price.
Lots of value on player props for power play points. And if you think it's going to be another game where there's a lot of penalties, a lot of juice, and like even a Marner power play point, just one, plus 155, a Matthews power play point, plus 140. So if you think that they're going to be on the power play and that trend will continue, you can get a little bit of value on power play points.
What's Tavares' power play point?
Tavares' power play point is plus 185.
Not that big, not enough of a gap. Usually I've been looking for the Tavares value. The only thing is Tavares hasn't been getting it, and I keep going, value, 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 and then he gets nothing, and I go, okay, maybe this is bad value. Maybe it turns out that it's bad value.
The only place that he's plus money for anything is an assist, plus 130.
Yeah.
And obviously a goal, but plus 160. Yeah.
So all things.
Power play points, or sorry, points in general, he's minus 150. So you have to be specific which point.
Yeah, I'm not going to be playing that one tonight. So yeah, to me, it's a lean towards the under, but mostly this is a no play tonight. Maybe a lean towards the Mitch Marner over 1.5 points. I'm certainly not going to play anything Tampa Bay, but if you believe that there's going to be a bounce back for them, that's probably where you're going to be looking for some of the value. Okay, the Toronto Blue Jays. Boy, this is a real fear of the sweep The Yankees are -147 favorites in this game, and in a weird way, I kind of think that's pretty generous. It's Nestor Cortes, who's on fire. He's the guy who strikes everybody out, the wonky delivery Yankee starting pitcher who's been amazing. Yankees -147. Yusei Kikuchi on the mound with his, I believe, ERA of 540. I could be wrong. 552. Damn, I went low. I went with low with guessing on Yusei Kikuchi's ERA. Jays. You want to bet them tonight? You want to bet that they avoid the sweep? Well, good news for you. You get +120. That's it for Yusei Kikuchi. Blake.
So here's the Cortes breakdown. And I know the Jays have already seen him once, so maybe you got a little familiar with that. He threw 4 1/3, 3 hits, no earned, 5 strikeouts. His next time out, he strikes out 12 Baltimore Orioles in 5 innings. He has a monster, almost 10-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio so far this year. And big point of note, for the Blue Jays, because they're so right-hand dominant, Cortes, for the second year in a row, has been death on righties. He'll mix 5 pitches in. It's a lot of cutters, so it's a lot of weak contact. That cutter so far this year, no one's hitting it for contact. The average exit velocity off his cutter is 87 miles an hour, which is nothing. And then against righties, he'll throw that hard sinker that it's hard to differentiate it from his fastball because his fastball doesn't come with a lot of gas. That sinker has a 67% whiff rate when right-handed batters swing at it this year. So that's a limited sample. He doesn't throw it a ton, but he does have that as a low in the zone. Even if you can reach it, you're just going to roll over it offering. So if you're the Blue Jays, you're looking at, well, hey, do you sit on the fastball and, you know, hope it's not the cutter? I don't really know. Some of his secondary stuff, his slider has been hit pretty hard this year. That's the one area he struggled. But Nestor Cortes is doing a nice job here. It's a lot of weak contact, and his command has improved significantly. So even though he doesn't get a ton of swing and misses with the fastball and the cutter, it is a little tough to hit him hard. Bo Bichette, though, 3-for-7 with a home run against him, and he's been turning it on a little
bit. Yeah, Bo Bichette's been hot.
Yeah, tonight's another night. I played it yesterday as well, and I mentioned on the show the Bo over 1.5 total bases at +120.
Yeah,
seems like a decent play there. You can't get a hits over 1.5 or over 0.5.
It's -270 for that.
Yeah, so you got to go Bo over 1.5 total bases +120. Mm-hmm. I think is the play on the Jays batting side. On the Kikuchi side, I mean, you know Kikuchi at this point. He's going to work slow. He's a lefty who gives up a lot of hard contact. So if you're a
He works slow, but your reward is that he gets hit hard. So there you go. That's good.
If you're a Gleyber Torres, a DJ LeMahieu, certainly if you're an Aaron Judge, Aaron Judge has only had 2 hits off of him in 11 career plate appearances. Those 2 hits have gone about a combined 1,400 feet into the stands. So if Aaron Judge steps into one here, I think the Judge home run's only at +350, but I might still play it just because – man, Aaron Judge is a terrifying guy. So this looks like not a great spot for the Jays. You really, really got to hope Kikuchi can come through with something better than what he's given you so far, because Cortes looks like he's pretty sharp.
So this is a gambling show. This is a gambling segment, The Wake and Rake. It is not about feelings other than Ailish, because she's all feelings with her gambling. I am just cold, hard, where's the edge? The edge is clearly with the Yankees' first 5-inning line. It's -109 for the Yankees to win the first 5. I don't understand that line whatsoever. Here's the 2 reasons why. What Blake just said about Nestor Cortes, what Blake just said about Yusei Kikuchi, but also the Jays can't afford right now with the bullpen after the series to just go to it immediately if Kikuchi is struggling. We've seen this already with this guy where when he struggles, they have to ride him. They go, buddy, we need 5 from you. We at least need 4 from you. I don't think a bailout's coming. I don't think that there's a guy that they're going to be able to turn to and say, okay, well, we're going to go to a bullpen game and we're going to throw the kitchen sink at trying to beat the New York Yankees tonight. I really do believe that New York has so many advantages, whether it's the way that they're hitting right now and the fact that the Blue Jays just frankly are not. The Blue Jays are not hitting right now. The team has got a very weak lineup, and outside of Bo Bichette, who has been pretty tough in the entire year, I don't have a lot of confidence in the Jays hitters right now. Nobody looks themselves at the plate, and the depth has been horrific. Kikuchi has not inspired confidence. I think they're going to have to leave him in the game. And the Yankees have been able to rest their bullpen. So if they do have to go to somebody, I think they'll be willing to turn a little bit early. So first five innings for the Yankees being basically even money is something I don't really understand. I actually think there's a big edge. And the only reason that you're playing the Blue Jays here is you're going, well, positive regression and weird things happen. From a logic standpoint, the Yankees first five is 100% the bet today.
Yeah, basically, if you're betting Jays, you're betting I'm not a believer in Nestor Cortes because he doesn't miss enough bats to have the strikeout rate that he has. That's basically the bet you're making. And hey, yeah, that's a reasonable bet. Like, he's a journeyman guy who only the last year and a half has figured it out. But 10-1 strikeout to walk ratio, 9-1 strikeout to walk ratio, I'm going to need to see proof that this lineup can be the lineup to regress some of that batted ball stuff for Cortes.
Pains me to say I agree with all of this against the Blue Jays. The reason I was in on them yesterday is because I was going to be at the show, at the game. Hoped that I could bring some positivity. It was an absolute disaster, but I would be betting against them certainly today. So you guys laid out some good points. I will be taking those bets.
Here's the thing. We preached the Yankees both games of this series in terms of the value of them. And in a weird way, tonight, their value seems the most obvious, which means they're probably going to lose. So it really is the way that I'm feeling about this thing is tonight it goes, hey, we've gone Yankees, Yankees, Yankees. The Yankees look so good. How many games can you win in a row? How many can you win in a row? And we're about to find out because, yeah, Kikuchi. This feels like a big Kikuchi game, by the way. From a narrative standpoint, from a love of the fan base standpoint, if you get swept by the Yankees and you're going to be sort of the face of that because the pitching has been good and the bats have struggled, but if Kikuchi goes out there tonight and gets shelled and the Jays have a little bit of a bounce back from the bats, I think that – I keep telling you guys, I think first impressions matter, and I think that the bar for Kikuchi is still he's a fifth starter, but – it's not been very pleasant to start here, and this is going to be one where it's pretty notable, and all of a sudden you're looking up at the Yankees in the standings early, and despite this season's start and the success that they've had, and it's just going to put a little bit of sour taste in people's mouth. Okay, so I think the play for us here is the lean towards the New York Yankees first five innings for me, and as for Blake as well. And Blake likes a lean towards the... By the way, a lean is just something where you're not putting a full unit of action on, which is the standard amount that you bet with. It's a slight edge towards something. And that extra lean is a... Blake likes the Aaron Judge home run prop at plus 350 as a bonus bet. Okay, no more time for bonus bets, which have been red hot. Bonus bets, boy, bonus bets, you gotta love them.
That's where you get your value, listeners. Value picks yesterday. My Sidney Crosby overshots. Well, he got 9 because it went to triple overtime. And Chris Kreider overshots. Oh, he got 7. So those were some free bets. Did I know it was going to go to triple overtime? No.
Yeah.
But I will go ahead.
Those are tainted. What were they in regulation?
I don't know.
9. Yeah, who cares? You won.
You didn't get any shots in overtime.
You put the money in your pockets and you walk away.
You're doing the anti-SI here where even your wins are losses.
Yeah. Well, actually, what I think is great about that is it's one of those – when you're an overbetter, all you ever dream of is the overtimes, right? You go, overtime. Just get overtime. For shot total, though, that's the ultimate dream of having two guys in the top six getting into triple overtime. Could you imagine losing that bet? Like, I had John Morant's – that was the other one that I gave out yesterday, by the way, the third. I couldn't remember. It was John Morant's point total in the Warriors game. And I had that, and he was sitting at, I think – 24 at the half, 23 at the half. And he scored, I think, 3 points for the first 9 minutes of the third quarter. And I was laughing going, I almost want this to lose just for the story. Like, that's when they get there. And that's how shot total would have been with triple overtime. Sidney Crosby shot total over, you get 3 overtimes and it doesn't hit. And you get to tell that as a story.
At least
let your bad beats be good stories. And none of our bad beats in the Wake and Rake have been good stories. So let's get back to the picking ways. Let's get back to the winning ways. All right. What was your best bet tonight, Ailish, for far?
Okay. So I'm going to go to the NHL. You know, baseball didn't do me well last night, and there is a low over-under in the Bruins-Hurricanes game. Over 5.5, but Carolina's been quite explosive. The Bruins struggled offensively, but we saw 6 goals regardless. Five of the last nine meetings between these two teams have seen at least 6 goals, and the last 3 meetings have combined for 20 goals. So I'm going to go with the over. It's a small total, over 5.5. It's the smallest one on the board tonight, and I believe in it, and we're going to change the mojo of the Wake and Rake today. So over 5.5 in the Bruins-Hurricanes game.
Okay.
That's it. Let's do it.
That game, the first game of that series, didn't see a lot of it, but was flipping it on and had the alt channel. You are reminded of how good that Carolina defense is. Mm-hmm. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, did they ever shut Boston down in that first contest. It was like we had all these conversations about who was going to be in net, who was going to be in net for Tampa Bay, or sorry, for Boston, and it was, who cares? Oh, God, for Carolina, 0 for 3. Who cares who's in net for them, because they absolutely shut it down. That's how you win with David Ayers. Okay, mine is going to be back to the NBA, and I'm going to go back to the totals, which is where I've been really, really on fire throughout the postseason. I'm taking the over. I've been an under guy all postseason. I think that usually there's great value on unders in playoff basketball. Like, you saw that yesterday in both of those games, actually, where the Warriors and Grizzlies total was way too high. The Bucks, Celtics, let's all keep it to ourselves. But them setting that line at 216 2 days in a row, this isn't a 216 series. Even with Marcus Smart out, it's not a 216.5 series. Keep betting the unders in those suckers. Maybe not when they hit the Milwaukee. We'll see what the line ends up being, but I loved the under yesterday. I don't love the over today in this Heat game, but here's what I will point to. In the last game, there was 198 points. Very low. Under 200. Going to need what, JD? Going to need 10 more points in this game? Well, the Philadelphia 76ers shot 17% from three, 18% if you do the real math roundup, which the nerds like Blake like to do, 25% for the Miami Heat. Just an awful night from three for both teams. I don't expect guys like Strus to go 1 of 7. I don't expect guys like Vincent to go 1 of 7. I don't expect Danny Green to go 1 of 5 and Tyrese Maxey to go 1 of 6 and James Harden to go 2 of 7. Nobody could hit water from a boat except for the wildly disrespected Tobias Harris, who was turned into a playoff performer who dropped 27 points in the first game of the series, just sticking it right in our eye once again. But I just think this is a positive regression game. I don't expect this to blow over. I think it's still going to be a little tight. But yeah, just if three-point shooting can normalize to anywhere close to 33%, we're going to hit the over in this game at 207. So yes, over 207 points in the Miami Heat and Philadelphia 76ers playoff game. Game two.
All right, my pick quickly. I'm going with the St. Louis Cardinals at the Kansas City Royals, just on the money line. Thought about the 5-inning line, dove into the stats. Kansas City also has the second worst bullpen ERA in the league. Chris Bubich is on the hill for them today. He just doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't miss bats at all. He's only averaged 3 innings per start, so you're potentially getting to the league's second worst bullpen early. St. Louis is obviously a capable enough club, and Adam Wainwright has been fine to good, as he always is, even though he's almost 41. And hey, am I siding with Wainwright because I'm getting a little older? Maybe I see Verlander with the gray hairs. I see Wainwright with the gray hairs. And I'm like, you know what? These are my guys. These are my guys this week of all weeks. Cardinals on the money line. So that makes our Wake and Rake for today, May 4th. The St. Louis Cardinals on the money line at the Kansas City Royals. Carolina Hurricanes and Boston Bruins over 5.5 goals. And the Philadelphia 76ers and Miami Heat over 207.5 total points. Lock it in. Let's get back on the winning track. Let's take a break. And on the other side, you want to talk strong percentages? There's nobody with better career percentages than Craig Simpson. We'll talk to him, and then we'll talk to Ricky Romero about Alek Manoah in the final hour of the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.